crisis over the workers whose future has been uncertain since the April 2014 unity deal. In December, meanwhile, Israel froze some $127 million in tax funds owed to the Palestinian Authority in revenge of the PA's decision to join the International Criminal Court. The move has added to the lack of funds facing Palestinian authorities and has led to major salary problems for even recognized employees of the Palestinian Authority.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh, Alan Monticello, Tarina Aguilar, and Ethan Martin. The producer is Sam Bowman. Our engineer is Matthew Olson. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Doug McVeigh.
And I'm Sarika Mehta. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO at 7, Democracy Now!, a news magazine hosted by award-winning journalist Amy Goodman. At 8 on Positively Revolting Talk Radio, hosts Ani and Lynn speak with local activist Teresa Rayford of Don't Shoot Portland. The topic is police killings of people of color. At 9, we'll hear Economic Update with host Richard Wolf. He talks about inadequate unemployment insurance, Ted Cruz's campaign money, and demonizing the poor. And later in the hour, Wolf interviews Yohi Gal about the worker co-op Tech Collective. Air Cascadia follows at 10, headlines, interviews, and commentary with host Chris Andre. Stay tuned at 10:15 for Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, The Digital Divide presents an exclusive interview with journalist, author, and professor Robert Scheer with your host, Rabia Yemin. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous, sustaining support. If you're not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. And stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth, featuring an interview with State Representative Lou Frederick about police accountability and profiling bills he has introduced in the Oregon legislature.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Thank you for listening to the KBOO Evening News. My name is Sam Bowman. Numerous bills dealing with police profiling, body cameras, transparency, and accountability for the use of force are making their way through the Oregon legislature. Around a dozen of these bills were sponsored by State Representative Lou Frederick, a Democrat from District 43, which covers parts of North and Northeast Portland. The relatively positive reception the bills have received is in marked contrast to the fate of similar bills in previous years, largely due to the primacy of police brutality and accountability in the national consciousness after high-profile incidents in Ferguson, Missouri, New York City, Cleveland, Ohio, and now South Carolina over the past year. According to the Center for Intercultural Organizing, Oregon is one of only 8 states that does not explicitly ban police profiling of minorities, and the state as a whole has no mechanism for reporting incidents of profiling, leaving that up to individual law enforcement agencies, not to mention watchdog groups like Portland Cop Watch and the Albina Ministerial Alliance. For more on the bills and the history of police reform in Oregon at the legislative level, I spoke with Representative Frederick this afternoon. Representative, can you give us just a brief overview of the police accountability laws or bills that you have put forward in the Oregon legislature this year?
Well, I've put forward a number of bills. I think the top three are probably dealing with the profiling issue and how we deal with profiling. There's also two bills that deal with both body cameras and the ability for folks to use cell phone cameras to take pictures. There are a number of bills that deal with excessive use of force definitions, how we might deal with investigations, and a number of other issues, including regular psychological evaluation of police officers. Many of the bills have been put forward in the past. Some were just put forward this session. I am optimistic about several of them, in particular the profiling bills, the investigation and the identification of profiling, and the bills related to cameras. So I'm looking forward. I think we're going to get something through the session regarding those.
What would you say the major differences are between the reception that you've gotten for these sorts of bills this year and the reception you've gotten previously?
Well, I think the reception is really completely different because they're being seen as not just a Portland-specific issue, but in fact statewide and nationally. There's a great deal of attention given to these issues across the country. And for various reasons, obviously, for Ferguson and New York and Cleveland and now North Charleston, all of these things have come up and people are seeing that people are not just imagining the concept of what many in the black community have called an occupation. So that there's that concern. But also I think people have heard about it enough down here that it's no longer a new concept, and it's the result of the kind of effort that the Center for Intercultural Organizing has put together statewide has been really important. They have been able to show that this issue is something that affects communities, minority communities in particular, across the state, you know, from Umatilla to Klamath Falls to Jackson to Roseburg and Eugene and Corvallis and obviously Portland. So that's something that people have seen. I think they've even had some discussions with folks in Astoria and in Newport. So I think we're seeing this as no longer an isolated kind of incident, but something that is important across the state and affects all of the legislators here. That's made a big difference.
In the light of those social changes that have made this a national issue in the past year, in your scanner column from January, you wrote, "Social progress towards real equality is the goal, but sometimes the law has to lead the way." Can you explain what you mean by that?
Well, yes. It's more of a quote that comes out of me recalling some of my time and spent with Dr. King. Part of what he had to say was, you know, law can't make someone love you, but it can certainly stop you from. I think he put it can stop you from lynching you, and that's pretty important. That's part of what we're dealing with here is the fact that we can begin the process and show the direction we want to go by way of laws. And by doing that, we begin a process of changing the social climate and the social culture at the time.
This time around, are you expecting or have you already felt any substantial pushback against these bills, either from your fellow legislators or from lobbying groups?
Well, there's always going to be pushback. I mean, we have, and sometimes it's pushback, and sometimes it's just trying to make sure that some things are clear. For instance, one of the big issues that we have to deal with regarding body cameras is who turns them on and off, and where are the images stored, as well as whether other software could be used, like facial recognition software on something like that. So we're still going to be talking about that as well. That's kind of pushback. We have other issues. Different groups have concerns, and we try to address those concerns. But there's always going to be some concern about different issues. Not quite the kind of vigorous complaints that we might have had in the past. So that's a difference. We've had people in the past, people have said that, you know, this was just something that was going on in Portland, imagining that that was the only place that, that this could be a problem. We no longer have that as a discussion. No one has come to me to say, well, it's just a Portland issue, you should solve it up there. People are, in fact, saying, well, we've got to figure out how to deal with this and how to solve it, because to some extent, I think the national focus has pointed out that this is not something that is just simply a very narrow area, all sorts of districts, all sorts of people are affected by it, and not just the stereotypic kind of thing that you've seen in the past.
The profiling bills in particular, that's HB 2001, 2, and 3, those...
Which will probably be coordinated and brought together into just one bill. Probably 2002, but those profiling bills are. I think it's important to recognize symbolism of that. That they were the first bills introduced, 2001, 2002, and 2003, and the Speaker has made it very clear that she's supporting them, and has been very, very active in trying to make sure that they get through.
And they've also gotten the support of the Oregon Association of Chiefs of Police. Were police organizations or representatives involved at all in the process of drafting any of these bills or developing them?
Not so much drafting them, but certainly the response to them. Yeah, I think everyone was involved. It's not just one group that was involved, and certainly not one group that determined how it was going to be written. Discussions took place about how this could be effective, and so every group you can imagine, I think, was involved in some aspect of drafting, or at least in discussion about it. So we've had presentations by all sorts of folks, and in the other amendments, etc. All of those things have been part of discussions by different groups.
More specifically, with the body camera law, Oregon has one of the more liberal public records laws in the country, and
right.
I know that in Iowa right now, the legislature is having this debate about how available to make the videos after they have been stored and cataloged. Do you see that being an issue in Oregon as far as...
Oh, absolutely. That is exactly the kind of discussion that's taking place. There are four different body camera bills that are in the session right now. I have one, and then there are three others. The discussion that's been taking place with a large group about the body cameras has included the concerns about how long they're stored, who gets access to them, whether the cameras can be turned on or off, and who does that, if they are allowed to be turned on or off. Those are significant discussions, and we are still there's still discussion in the Judiciary Committee about where that's going to go. I don't know exactly where that's going to go completely, but there's certainly agreement that this needs to be carefully evaluated and determined who gets access, because there are aspects of this kind of thing. Do you allow anyone to have access to any kind of video that might come out of that? And that's a real concern, because you can have confidential issues, you can have victims that may not want to find themselves part of a news show or something like that. I mean, these are significant issues, and I understand why Iowa and everyone else is looking at this.
In South Carolina, with the recent shooting of Walter Scott by a
right.
police officer, which was caught on camera by someone standing by, a civilian, the person who caught that footage has said that he knew that what he saw was wrong, but he was frightened by what might happen to him if he made that footage public.
I understand why he felt that way, and I have a bill that's basically is saying that that we want to be able to allow bystanders who are not interfering with police to continue to be able to videotape and have audio of what's taking place during that. When a policeman is, when a law enforcement officer is engaged in a public job, when they're on the job publicly, that they should, that this should be allowed, and they should not, anyone with a camera or a cell phone who is not directly interfering, be allowed to continue to videotape or to do what they need to do to record it. So that's one of the bills that I have. It's one of the bills that we had discussions on, had a hearing on already. We'll see how far that goes at this point.
You spoke before the Judiciary Committee last month about your own experiences with police profiling. How have those experiences shaped your personal view of the police?
Well, I've had lots of different experiences with police, good and bad. The profiling issues are very clear for me. I understand very clearly the kind of concerns and the understanding that the profiling is not just a haphazard kind of thing. It is, in fact, targeted, and that it really can create a sense of being under siege, being mistreated. One of my most recent events was I was pulled over because of a hole in my a light in my tail light there, and they wanted to just check on, that I needed to know about that. This was the middle of the day, sunny day, almost like this. I think it was a little cooler in terms of the temperature, but beyond that, so I recognize exactly what that profiling thing takes place. And someone asked me how many times have I been pulled over. I really can't remember the number because I'm generally dealing with being pulled over for non-ticketed items at least once a year. So I know this firsthand. And I've had that the more serious experience with a gun being pulled on me as I was a passenger.